Welcome to the pre-round three and the all-important pre-price change Super Coach Coach podcast. I'm back with FP Donkey. Welcome back, mate.
G'day, mate. Coming to you from the beautiful Busselton at the moment, home of Australia's longest pier. Weather here is not perfect, but it is a pretty good time out here. Lots of water, activities to do, having a good time, and spending lots of time thinking about Super Coach. That was an interesting round of footy that we had. Our first time this year, we've got some like really big decisions to make.
And with the trade boost adding a layer of strategy and complexity we've never had to navigate before, it's going to be interesting to see how many people take up that option and what strategy that brings. I think the temptation to get your team perfectly set is going to be high, so I anticipate lots of people activating the trade boost for the first time this season in round three. Just as a quick temperature check, your likelihood of activating the trade boost button, Mark?
It's quite interesting. So last week and the week before, I was like, no, don't use it for corrections. I think it's way more valuable. Keep it for longer. And then you get into the place where you're actually, it's the first time you've been able to actually use three trades. You see three corrections that you could make in your team, three ways to make it better. And the temptation to use it is very, very strong, especially with some of these players that maybe we don't have in our teams doing really well. Not so much the players in our teams not doing as well. I don't think that that's as much of a force this time, but I think it's a really interesting psychological thing where from a distance, you know what the right thing is to do, which is probably try not to use it. But then once you're in the moment, you see the options and you're like, yeah, I really like the sound of that.
Yeah, well, I think until all five trade boosts are tapped, we're going to be facing this every single week. So it'd be interesting to see how we go. Anyway, we're going to spend more time in our Patreon bonus talking through trade boost strategy and those types of discussions. In the main show, we have more than enough to cover in terms of looking at just the top trade in and the top trade out targets. So we've picked the top seven trade in targets to talk about and the top seven trade out targets, which we will go through very shortly. But before we do, a quick update in terms of how our teams went, and not too excited about this because you beat me again 2 weeks in a row. So I'll go first. Yeah, boo. 23-14 was my score. That was terrible. Enough to do. Yeah, not great. Dropped me. I'm sitting at the rank of 20K, but pretty happy with my team, to be honest. Anything I'll be doing is sideways. I don't have any rookie mistakes. I don't have any terrible options that I've started. Obviously don't have some of the high scorers like Cripps and Hewitt, which is going to dominate the discussion, but I'm happy and probably still headlined by the fact that skipping Max Gawn for another week and playing Tim English in his stead has continued to pay dividends. Yeah, we'll see how that continues to go because the Western Bulldogs did struggle in the clearance situations a little bit due to Tim English and how he played in the ruck. So I have a sneaking suspicion that they will change that up this week and might be back in the team. So it'd be interesting to see how things go from here.
Yeah, I'm not sure that English won a hit out in the first half at all. It's pretty annoying, to be honest, to be ranked 7,000 higher than you and you still to be so smug. I'd like to wipe that smile off your face a little bit. Less confident in my team sitting at 13K rank, but most things have gone right so far and I don't really have any like obvious players to get rid of. Maybe Whitfield is the player that's probably on my radar the most.
But you're tempted to join the Jerry train, though. Choo-choo.
Absolutely, yeah. I think that CCJ didn't play on the weekend, which was interesting. Like, I don't expect them to keep him in the reserves forever, but then they probably can't play all three of the big guys. So it's going to be interesting how that plays out. And I don't love, we'll get into it more on the show, but I don't love the fact that his opponents have been not great the first 2 weeks. So Hawthorn in round one, they had Lynch and Reeves, and Lynch got injured really early in the game. And then against West Coast, Nick Nat didn't play. So I think that Jerry's scores are probably a bit misleading.
Alrighty, let's get into a quick update in our community and then we'll kick off with the trade-in and trade-out targets. All right, the top scorer in our Super Coach Coach Patreon group was Team Cavalier Roundhead, Rupert's team. He is a long-term member of the community, one of our veterans as well. So great to see Rupert have a cracking round. Well done, Rupert. And then in our main super coach group, we had Daniel's team, Masses Machine, score 25-23. So two huge scores. Rupert just pipped him by 2 points there. So great to see some members of our community breaking the 2,500 barrier earlier on in the season. So I don't think we've seen that all too often. Well done to those guys. Let's start with the trade out targets. And we're going to go the most traded out first. And that first player, unsurprisingly, Lockie Whitfield. What's going on there, Mark? We were very excited about this guy. I think the player that I locked first in the back line, actually, and yeah. I am shocked to see that after two scores in the 70s, he's now potentially going to move out of 11% of teams. So easily the number one candidate. I think there were some question marks in terms of how he was moving in the first round. In the second round, didn't really seem to be as much of a problem. So it was probably more cramp in the first round, but we still didn't see him playing the run-and-gun carry role that we would otherwise like to see. And that's probably the major concern. They've had halfbacks develop over the last few years. And I don't know whether Whitfield has the same dominance in role moving the ball there. Now, that's probably the main concern on top of GWS also not starting particularly well for the start of the season. 502k is still very cheap. I remember last week when his name came up, Mark, you said, don't worry about Whitfield. He's got a very high scoring ceiling, but another score in the 70s obviously has you a little bit worried. And I guess he's failing the eye test too. I'm guessing the other reason people are looking at trading out Whitfield is a lot of the attractive trade in targets are about 400-ish k. So he unlocks a crucial sort of cash tranche so that you'll be able to trade in a Hewitt or you'll be able to trade in a Cripps and the like. Is that sort of what has you motivated and looking at Lockie Whitfield, Mark?
Yeah, partly. So we look through our teams and we're like, okay, I need one premium that I need to trade out. Who's not performing? And that's why names like Gawn and Steele and Whitfield are coming up. I did watch Whitfield very closely on the weekend. And I think that you nailed it with the role situation that the team got the ball in Cummings' hand a lot and Whitfield just wasn't that exit player out of the Giants' back line. I think he took less than five kick-ins. He wasn't doing a lot of the kick-ins. And realistically, I want players in my team to either be getting hit-outs, clearances, kick-ins, or goals. And if you're not getting many of them, it's really, really hard to score well in Supercoach. And that's why you have wingers that can get 35 touches and still not score very well. So I was really disappointed in what I saw from Whitfield, but then I was really disappointed in what I saw from the Giants. It was hard to understand their game style on the weekend. They were chipping the ball around way too much and not going direct as they needed to. And maybe that's credit to the Tigers team defense and how they were playing. And Whitfield, a lot of the time, he went for a big kick and it got intercepted. He would just chip it backwards when he should have been going forwards. Yeah, I was not happy at all with what I saw from Whitfield on the weekend. And realistically, he got 23 touches. He scored 85 Dream Team. That could easily be 100 or so. But Whitfield would have to totally turn around his season from here to end up being a good pick. I don't think he's got huge downside. If he did lose money, is there a chance that I'd bring him back in if he started to perform well? Absolutely. I could imagine definitely sitting on him. But given the fact there are players I want to bring in, he's probably out of my team. I'm not liking what I'm saying so far.
I think the biggest driver for me looking at him closely is he's also got the run 12 bye. Now, I'd feel a lot more comfortable running with him until the midseason if he had the round 13 or round 14 buys, because if you're still underperforming at that point, I mean, Whitfield might drop 100K in value, but it's hard to see him in the 300K bracket, right? So you can still side swap him and you're not paying too much of a tax, but his upside, his ability to still end up as a top six, top eight defender is there, but that round 12 buy is a serious concern. Now, having said that, I'm still most likely to move on him for a structural reason. So if you ended up starting five defensive premiums, then restructuring and bringing in a Skinner, Driscoll, or a Sin, and putting both Hinge and McCartan on field does make sense to me. And it's probably why I'm more likely to look at him than I would say potentially other people should if he's your D4. And if he's your D4 and you don't have Hewitt, that could be another reason. So moving down from Whitfield to Hewitt, bringing in a guy who potentially ends up in the top six defenders at the end of the year, but also nets you, importantly, 100K as a downgrade is pretty tempting. So if you don't fall into those situations, though, you've got to be pretty tempted to say, just keep holding him.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Which rookie you go down to, I think, is a really interesting question because the three guys that you mentioned have only played one game. Gibkus is quite expensive, but does look like a key part of the Richmond background, so he would potentially be one. If he didn't have McCartan, I would definitely go in that direction, but I think everyone pretty much does. It's pretty hard to pick Skinner, Sinner, or Driscoll based on what we saw on the weekend, I think. The Hewitt one gets to a really interesting place because Hewitt does have that thing that I was saying, which is the center clearances. So he's going to be in a lot of those center bounces, or based on the first 2 weeks, he will be. And that is the main role that he plays. And he's been brilliant. He's looked fantastic in that role. Will Hewitt average more than Whitfield for the rest of the season? I'm not sure that I'm really confident to say that Hewitt will. So I think that that is a pretty line ball sort of call. And I guess it depends what you can do with that 100K.
At this stage, I'm not personally looking to go from Whitfield to Hewitt, but there may be some people's trade situations where most likely you're going to use a trade boost, I guess, to extract that 100K in a more useful way elsewhere. I think a lot of people are trying to find another 150K in a downgrade elsewhere, or in order to upgrade like a Berry to a Cripps, for example, or finding another 100K allows you to do that. So I have a feeling that's why people are probably also looking at Whitfield more closely, is this sort of three trade combo.
Just because of DPP, I think the tricky bit about Whitfield is that to upgrade Whitfield to Cripps requires two trades in every situation. So that's a lot of trades to use. If you could just side swap Whitfield to Cripps, I think I'd be a lot more comfortable with that.
Yep, agree with that. All right, let's move on to the next player, Dusty. Now, he's off for personal reasons, which is unfortunate for the people that brought him in. I think you mentioned in the preseason, Mark, that it's weird that Dusty used to have this history of getting on park, and within a few seasons that's sort of torn to pieces. This is obviously a bit of an unfortunate personal situation, and
it is.
I think he's actually off indefinitely was the last bit that I read. Have you read anything that's different to that?
No, I haven't. Listening to Hardwick, he just said that they're not going to go into it, and when he's ready, he's ready, and they'll keep contact open, and Dusty's the priority right now, which makes sense.
You got to trade on that basis then during correction week, I think, with Dusty being out for potentially.
Yeah, and he's owned by quite a lot of people, isn't he? Like 30% of people.
Extend for weeks.
And it could come back throughout the season, you would think. He's not going to, I mean, his dad, his best mate has passed away. Like, he's not just going to come back and be fine. I think that this is something that's going to be ongoing for the rest of the year, whether that means ongoing missing games or not. But I think the risk of that having an impact throughout the season is too high. And so you probably do have to move Dusty on.
All right, the next player, Max Gawn. He is obviously a set and forget player. So it's a weird situation that we're discussing trading out Gawn. And to be honest, of all the various trade out targets, he's probably the one that I'd be most hesitant to move on, beyond Dusty, of course. But in terms of a guy who's fit and playing, he still looks like he's going to be top two, top three type ruck. And I understand after a couple of nighties looking at that and looking at Luke Jackson, how well he's playing, but Gawn is one of the dominant players of the competition. And unless it really unlocks a lot of value to move to players that you want elsewhere on field. Again, this is another one where I'm assuming people are looking at Gawn and looking at him in the three trade combo. I personally don't really see it. And that's coming from a person that obviously didn't start Gawn, but I don't know how tempted I would be into trading to English, who we've just discussed the risk about, trading all the way down to, you know, a Lloyd Meek or Braden Pruce, like the ruck merry-go-round. You might not be able to get off that for a few weeks.
And if anyone knows about that, it is us. We are ruck merry-go-round experts. And if you can avoid that, definitely recommend it. The fact that we're talking about trading out Gawn after 2 weeks is a bit of a surprise. I think it would probably be helpful if one of us actually had Gorn in our teams. Luke Jackson has looked incredible, but I don't think he's going to take a lot more ruck time from Gorn than he did last year. And Gorn has looked close to some big gains. He didn't take a bunch of marks on the weekend. I mean, there's talk that the ball was a bit wet, especially in the second half. Gold Coast probably spoiled him a bit. Things just didn't fall his way. Had a lot of free kicks against him. I definitely expect him to be the top two rucks. Based on what we've seen so far, potentially our forecast was right that he would drop off a little bit at his price, but I still think he's going to do really, really well. And I will be looking to bring him into my team as soon as I can. And I think that a lot of coaches that I'm hearing are talking about like a Grundy, Hayes, Dixon sort of ruck line. I think that is incredibly risky, especially with Ryder coming back, Darling coming back. Dixon and Hayes are not locked completely into those sides. I guess you've got Bruce as a backup who was really good in the VFL and Flynn was terrible at AFL level. So, I mean, there are some backup plans there. And I think if Jerry was actually ruck forward listed, that it would make a lot more sense. But yeah, I don't love trading out a guy that everyone else is going to want to bring in.
I agree with everything you said there, Mark. And I guess something for people to keep in mind, I know the temptation with Correction Trade Week is try and look at your team in terms of resetting it to what an ideal starting team would be. But just keep in mind that that's now blurred by having only 2 weeks of history and wiping out comparatively the months and years of scoring history that's preceded your decision making, and trades now have to be made independent from your prior decision. So trading out Gorn, you need to make sure that the cash you can use elsewhere is going to more than make up for the fact that Gorn could still average 125 from here. All right, let's move to the next player. Jeremy McGovern is a trade out target. Now, he's an interesting one.
I'm not sure many people have Jeremy McGovern in their sides, mate.
Thanks for the correction. Mitch McGovern, sorry. So Mitch, of all the players that we've talked about, he probably has the lowest scoring average. And the interesting part is for his starting price point, though, he's not necessarily a must trade out. At 256,000, he has a little bit more time to bubble along. As long as he gets to 400K at some stage and you trade him out, that's probably enough. Now, having said that, if there's a player that you really like as a side swap option and is more likely to average closer to premium numbers while they're in your team and go up more in cash, that's going to be pretty tempting. So I think Jerry and Will Brody, they're probably two candidates, but I guess McGovern can still average 75, potentially 80 from here. And Jerry and Brody could still average, you know, only 90 or 85 from here. So it's more marginal than I think it seems on paper. And I'm not necessarily somebody that's saying you should be trading Mitch McGovern out, but I can understand the desire to. I'd be more recommending how you look at restructuring up versus doing a direct side swap. Potentially the only one that I made exception to is Jerry, but I'm probably a biased owner there and thinking that, you know, hopefully he is the number one ruck. And he's playing majority of the ruck time still, that he could average, you know, 95, which would maybe make that side swap more worthwhile.
Yeah, I mean, if Jerry was going to average 95, you'd do it every day. McGovern could still come good. I think that you're right there, and that there's not really a pressing need to trade him unless you find someone else that you're really keen on. He had a shocker against the Bulldogs, particularly in that first half, got a little bit better, gave away a few free kicks, didn't really get a lot of the ball. I mean, there's some concern around him relying too much on intercept possessions in order to score his points. He's actually quite good at the intercept marks, but Carlton just have so many ball movers out of the back line. Like, you've got Newman, for any other club, might be their number one guy coming out of back. You've got Williams, who loves bringing the ball out. Saad, Doherty. There's four players that are going to take a lot of the points of bringing the ball out of that defensive line. So, and McGovern, where McGovern sits in that, I'm not sure. So as far as kickouts and as far as going through him on transitions and exits, it does worry me a bit, and probably enough that I'll probably cut my losses with McGovern this week.
I think what we saw was McGovern playing more of a decoy role and then creating the opportunity for a Saad, a Williams, a Doherty type to get the exit out. But if teams correct and rather than chasing the decoy, they stay tagged on these arguably better players that can exit with skill out of the back line, then all of a sudden McGovern becomes open. They have enough threats that you could easily see a game that falls into his favor because they decide to play on the smalls instead of the decoy. So I can understand the point for moving him on. I'm probably 50-50 in terms of whether or not I actually make that move, but he's certainly one of the prime candidates in my team, and I understand why he's one of the top trade out options. All right, we'll move to the next player, Jack Steele. Now, this is another cash grab. I think potentially a little bit more palatable than Gorn, because you could downgrade from Steele to Cripps, for example. And not just that, Steele and in the midfield is more replaceable than Gorn in the rucks. Of all the options that we've talked through, a Steele to Cripps cash grab, for example, actually would tempt me a fair bit. That unlocks 220K, which you can use to upgrade McGovern up to Heaney or somebody of that ilk, Jordan Tagawi, that sort of type. I'm pretty pro moving Steele on and using some of that cash. But again, like Gorn, is going to be a guy that's targeted. So I can understand holding him as well. Not a must trade out for sure.
Yeah, because he is someone that in 4 weeks' time you'd be looking to bring in, because I haven't completely revised my Steele predictions down a lot. I mean, he did have a period last year where he was averaging around that 100 mark and then just went ballistic afterwards. So if he gets to a good price, I'd definitely be looking to bring him in. So I don't think he is a must trade, and I probably wouldn't be like sideways trading him to Miller or something like that, or Oliver, or I guess maybe Petrarca is a bit exciting. You might think about doing that because you get a bit of cash involved as well. But yeah, Steele to Cripps doesn't seem too bad at this stage. Their prices will converge and you can potentially get Steele back later. I'd be reasonably happy if I still had Steele in my team. I wouldn't be like desperate to find ways to get rid of him. I think it's just a, like you said, a restructuring trade boost kind of reasons is why people are getting rid of him.
If you're one of those that started Chapman, that unlocks you to go from Chapman to Hewitt, for example. I can understand, compared to Whitfield to Hewitt, which unlocks 100K, McGovern to a rookie that unlocks 150, or even 50K to Zeri, like you just got so much more buffer because of Steele's starting price point. So the ability to use and deploy that cash more effectively, essentially to bring on an extra premium, is just a lot more easy to do than anywhere else. You're probably looking at a third trade in order to make that happen. Whereas when you trade Steele out, you could trade Steele out and one other player, keep the two, keep your trade boost, and Bob's your uncle.
I think I definitely agree with you, Joe, that I like that trade more than the Gorn trade.
Awesome. All right, next, Berry. Now, another borderline trade. I think more likely to hold on to him, to McGovern, and marginal differences in trade out sort of reflect that. Berry at 268 was a little bit affected by having to play a tagging role on Merritt, but he didn't play a hard tagging role, and he has the ability to move from tagging to sort of still having a bit of offensive, staying a bit free to be a dangerous option, to not be too concerned about him in the longer term. I think if the hopes was that he'd recapture that average of 97 from a few years ago, that's probably dissipated a little bit. I think he can still average 85 from here and be more than a decent mid-pricer. So I can understand against restructuring. I think I'd be most likely to trade out Berry to upgrade him to Patrick Cripps. That's probably the only situation where I'd look at moving Berry. Even Berry to Dylan Stevens, I don't know how super that is unless it really unlocks something with that 100K.
Yeah, I agree with most of that. I think he scored pretty well considering he was tagging Zach for half a game of footy. And in that first week, his first quarter was just so impressive that I think that he will have a really big game in him somewhere. And I still have a lot of high hopes for Berry. I think that you're right that Berry to Cripps is a trade that a lot of teams will end up considering just because it is the easiest to get the cash for, and it's not a bad move. Berry versus Ward to Cripps is an interesting discussion. I think if I could do Ward instead of Berry out, I would probably do that. But I'm happy to have both Ward and Berry in my side.
And that's the last player we had to talk about was Josh Ward. 180K means that you basically are trading Ward out instead of Berry if, I guess, that's the person, whoever you keep is the one that's left on field. But in terms of value, like Ward I think he's pretty safe for having a big game down the line. He's just going to be a slower burn rookie, but he's getting more than enough DT points, more than enough center bounce attendances that he will spike a big game. At 180K, I'm reasonably confident he's going to get up to 350 at some stage, which means that he's going to present at least 170K of upside from here. So it's hard to trade out a rookie that's playing games and that will go up reasonable amount of in price for the role that he's playing. Like compared to a lot of the other midfield rookies, he's actually got one of the best roles. He's got a better role than Dylan Stevens even. He's just playing for, you can't even say they're struggling as much because they're 2-0 at the moment, but he's just a young player who's still making a fist at dealing with the pressure and probably disposing of the ball in a way that doesn't always lead to negative points or as much as it does today. But I have no issues with trading, or sorry, keeping Ward. I think you're only doing that if you're looking to upgrade to Cripps, I think. And I certainly wouldn't be doing Ward to Stevens.
Totally agree with that. I think that the fact that if you look purely at points, Ward looks like a pretty bad pick so far, but his role and potential, I think, is still one well and truly there. So quite happy to have him. I think that if you're trading Berry, if you're trading Ward, you're really trying to use these trade boosts to force things in your team. Whether that's bad or good, because Cripps does look like a must-have at 450, you really do seem to be forcing trades.
All right, let's move to the trade-ins and headed by Cripps. So it's a good segue. He's easily the most traded-in player this week, 454,000. I think the biggest challenge is that in the midfield, there doesn't seem to be a lot of dud picks. Now, you can certainly restructure and move a Berry or a Ward up to him, but you're sacrificing somebody who definitely looks like they have 150K price increase in them. It's more the restructure to say, well, I'll have Cripps instead of a Lockie Whitfield. So my points on field is going to be boosted by 15 to 20 points, let's say. That's what you're driving for by restructuring with Cripps. I think that he's fairly up in that top bracket for trade in targets, but they're probably people who, as you pointed out, Mark, are forcing that situation, not realizing that they may be sacrificing some cash generation or some risk inside swaps in order to facilitate that. So if you end up swapping Whitfield to Hewitt, and let's say Whitfield does manage to maintain a 5 point per game average increase over Hewitt for the next X rounds, you're essentially just freeing up 100K, but still potentially negating a little bit of the gain that you get moving up to Cripps from a Berry type. Look, I'm not trying to tell anyone not to bring Cripps in. I think that'd be pretty crazy to do at this point. He will be in about half of the teams after this round of trading, and he presents a lot of value. Looks like he'll be top eight. Carlton are playing a lot better, but just caution against feeling like he is an absolute must-have. I think you can fade him, and it might be painful for the first few rounds, but I think you can make up for that with better use of your trades in the longer run.
Wow. And it's very rare that a player is a must-have. I wonder what Cripps would have to average from here for us to actually consider him a must-have. Would it be 125 or something?
I think 120 plus would probably do it.
So from 450. So at 115, is he a must-have? It's getting close, right? And he's shown in the past that he can do 115. He probably hasn't shown in the past that he can do 115 and play 22 and not have niggles along the way. He's already had... The thing that concerns me about Cripps already is he's come off with a ankle knock in the first game and then a head gash in the second game. So he's going to keep getting hurt as the games go on. And that's probably why one of the reasons we didn't pick him to begin with. But he's just so hot at the start and it doesn't look like slowing down. Yeah, I think that are we moving a lot of players around my team to bring him in at 450 if you can get a premium midfielder that averages 115, that's an incredible deal. I mean, looking at the negative case, you've got he's goal kicking. Like, has he even kicked a point this year? I think he's kicked, what, seven straight or something? Kicking from set shots is amazing. And if it wasn't for his kicking in that first quarter of the first round, he'd be averaging 150 plus right now. I guess the other thing is we've been talking all along, we haven't seen him with Walsh and Chera and the full Blues complement of midfield, but maybe you don't ever see that. I'm trying to point out it's not purely clear-cut, because I think a lot of people will just look at the scores and think it's really, really clear-cut to bring him in. And all that said, I'm more than likely to bring him in myself.
I think the biggest negative case beyond injury is just the fact that in his best seasons, he was tagged. Now, if he gets to continue to be this dominant, the tag may start drifting his way and that may start affecting the scores, especially if Walsh, due to an interrupted preseason, doesn't get to the stage where he'd be tagged over Cripps. I think that would be the main risk of him not going 120. If he doesn't get tagged for the rest of the year, he's shown the ability to do 120 plus. And that's probably the major case for bringing Cripps in. I think 115 is a player that I wouldn't be doing a trade boost for, but 120 plus, I can understand why people might be doing that. So you're going to have to make your own calculation. I know it seems reasonably marginal, but that's the margin you're playing with when you're talking about comparing an ultra premium toward a must-have player. And there's a lot of ultra premiums in Supercoach midfield these days. Probably in the past, if he was presenting 117, 119, there was maybe only six players that do that a year. And so you definitely get him into that status. But we're now at a point where you have 8 to 10 candidates who now can do that. So that changes a little bit. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out. I'm personally definitely looking at him this week, more as a restructure because I have a fifth defender at the moment, but there's a chance that I end up passing on him as well. All right, next player, Isaac Heaney, 454,000. He's averaging 141. Now, of all the players that we're going to talk about, he's probably in the bottom couple in terms of players that I would be looking at. I'd be really, really happy if I started him. But the truth of the matter is he's still playing a similar amount of center bounce attendances than he was previously. He's just dominating the forward line, and we've seen Heaney do that. I don't think the equation has changed too much. If you're restructuring the forward line, I think I would be happy to trade Heaney in because he's probably, I think you mentioned it, Mark, in the show last week, and I'd be the same. Heaney was the next picked forward. So if you're restructuring to bring in another forward premium, I can understand bringing Heaney in, but I wouldn't be forcing a structure change to bring Heaney in. I think he's still looking at a 95 to 105 average. 105 would certainly be dangerous, but at 450, there is some sideways risk in that. With all this, right, I guess they're highly picked for a reason. So we're more likely than not to present you the counterpoint just to help you make sure that you're measured in your decision-making this week. We're not trying to say any of these players are bad picks. They're obviously outperforming their price by heaps.
Yeah, and I agree with everything you've just said about Heaney there. And I think the tricky bit about bringing him in is that I didn't start him because he didn't fit the structure, and I'm not sure the information we have now would make me change my forward structure. There's rookies down there, there's mid-prices down there, there's not a lot of need to have more than two premiums.
Next player, George Hewitt, 400K. Now, he's another really interesting player. I think the temptation with Hewitt is, with Carlton looking like they might be a top eight team, top six team, they just beat the Western Bulldogs, who didn't get too crushed by Melbourne. The temptation is to say 105 is well within grasp. And so 400K to potentially be a top six defender by the end of the year, the temptation is definitely there. The downside case is we still haven't seen him perform with Chera. Counter to that is Hewitt still started the second most center bounces. And of all the players, he's probably least flexible in that his value is more in the midfield. He was top three in the BNF at Sydney prior to moving over to Carlton. Twitter, especially the Sydney folk, has said that it's only Victorian bias that is underrated George Hewitt. More than enough reasons to trade to Hewitt. I'd say that of the three we've talked about so far, he seems structurally the most tempting. If I didn't have five defensive premiums, I'd be much more likely to look at him than in my situation at the moment.
Yeah, interesting. I think if you've got Chapman, trying to get up to Hewitt is a really obvious move. And I think that if Cripps hadn't performed well on the weekend, we would have been hearing Cripps to Hewitt all week. That would have been the number one trade, I think, this week, if Cripps had posted another 70. He looked awesome. Let's just be honest. Like, both games, he's looked amazing. His clearance work, his focus on the ball, the fact that he just gets his head over the ball and gets the ball out has been absolutely unbelievable. I think he was like 29 handballs and three kicks or something on the weekend out of his 32 touches, which is a little bit concerning. Like, if there was a downside, that would be the risk, because kicks are the most important for Supercoach. But because the ball that he's getting is contested and effective, He's sort of making up for that. Probably doesn't fit the trades that I'm looking at this week, but if he does for you, then I certainly wouldn't try and talk you out of him.
If anyone is playing three defensive premiums, four with an underperforming, or four plus Chapman, Hewitt makes a lot of sense. Structurally, I would suggest that he would make more sense for a lot of teams than Cripps and Heaney, where we just don't have the same amount of underperformers in the midfield and the forward line, and most people are more looking at side swaps.
I agree with that.
All right, let's go to Jake Bowie. Now, interesting one at 265K. We shaded him. He scored 58 after round one. Everybody would have been saying, I knew that wasn't going to work. Yeah. And then people that stuck with him, a 151 later, another Rising Star nomination, 34 disposals, was it 16 intercept marks? Like, it was just a ridiculous game from him. Now, 151 is large enough that his next two price movements are going to be so big that it's a bit like the Taylor Walker situation last year after he had a big round two. He could very much just be a stepladder option. And with the extra trades, you could trade down to another rookie or something like that and make some quick cash, even if he's not a long-term keeper. So I really don't mind this selection from a stepladder point of view, but I understand that he will probably be lower in the selection stakes because he's not a keeper like a lot of the other players that we're looking at. You know, Heaney, Cripps, Hewitt are players that you trade in, you're happy to keep, and they offer value. So they tick a lot more boxes than Bowie. I don't think that you'd probably be running him all the way till the buys, for example. I think that you're looking for a price peak and then to trade him out. And it may be as soon as after another two, three rounds. But that 151 and the five extra trades does make him a sensible potential side swap. Like, I have no issues going Chapman to Bowie and just trying to ride that price movement.
Yeah, and I think that he may be a key for some people to get out of the Whitfield and into Cripps. I think that some people might be using that way. And the concern that I had with him is exactly what you raised, Marcus, which is that you're actually going to want to trade him in 3 or 4 weeks. It's not going to be like I'm going to use this guy and I'm going to get my rookies rid of first and then trade Bowie. It's going to be, he has to be a priority in 3 or 4 weeks when he's still got that money in the system. And I guess that the potential is that Salem's not there. They've still got some defensive injuries. Potentially his role is increased for the next few weeks. I know that Mitch Hibbard is looking to potentially be a test this week, but he's a bit crap these days. So maybe Bowie keeps those points and can average 80 or 90 over the next 4 weeks. And if he could do that, then it's just going to be an amazing pick.
I'd say that I'm probably more likely to guess that he'd average 75 from here than the 90.
I agree.
I think he'll probably land somewhere in the middle. That doesn't make him a bad selection. We just want to flag it to people that are mentioning, oh, well, with Salem going down, does this mean he's closer to a 90 and that's why they're looking at him? I think you got to be happy that he's just a cash grab if that ends up being the case, and that's still a valid selection. I just wouldn't be doing it assuming that he's a longer term or even a medium term keeper. And like you said, you're trying to move him before you have to downgrade your rookies or use a trade boost to do that while you're moving your rookies rather than a player that you're holding for a long term. Next one, Tristan Jarry. He's averaging 208K. Of all the players that we're talking about in terms of a potential cash grab, he offers probably the highest amount of upside. If he can maintain 85 to 95, you might be looking at cashing him out at 450K. 250K as a price increase. That's probably going to be more than even Patrick Cripps. Cripps would have to average 125 and cost 700K in order to match that. I think that he's one of the more tempting options. The only reason he's not in as high consideration is that all the other forward mid prices are looking relatively okay. And even a McGovern to Jerry seems relatively side swappy. And Jerry obviously still has some risks with him with role uncertainty and the risk of CCJ and all that sort of jazz. But I certainly like that pick. I know a lot of people are trying to target bringing him in this week. And I think that makes sense.
McGovern to Jerry looks pretty likely for my team this week.
Next player, outside of Heaney, this guy's probably the one that ranks slightly below in terms of the top trade-in options. Luke Jackson, 390K, averaging 113 for the season. If he can average probably still have to average closer to 100 from here to be worth picking at that price point. And that's a major risk. Looking at his history, he's still playing with Max Gawn. Like, I mean, I just don't see him really hitting 100 average for the remainder of the season. This one feels more like a trap. The top seven traded in players are above 6%, and then there's a huge drop off to 2%. So Jackson is like really up there in terms of how people are looking at him. Yeah, easily the one least in consideration for mine. I'd much prefer pay an extra 50K and just pick up a Heaney or a Degoe. And if you really want to ruck forward, look to Tim English, who's 100K.
I just think we're way too early on Jackson, but Jesus Christ, he looked amazing on the weekend. Like, he was so good. He's going to be a really fun player to watch over the next few years, but he is not Supercoach relevant right now.
If you started with him, enjoy the ride. And right, Lucky Neal, he's the last one.
You made a really good call there. Degoe would be my pick way above Jackson.
All right, last one that we're going to cover is Lucky Neal. Now, the only reason why he's seventh is because like 50% of teams already have him. If you don't have Lucky Neal, come on, he's a must pick. I mean, of all the players we've talked about so far, if you do not have Lucky Neal, prioritize him first.
That's way above Patrick Cripps.
Yeah, it always goes without saying. I mean, we probably don't need to say that because he scored like 198, but yeah, pick him. I mean, the rest of the 40% we're not trading him in. What are you doing? He should probably be coming into... That probably tells me, actually, of the 100% of teams playing, there's like 40% that are not checking their teams already, because if he's not in 100% of teams, I don't know what's happening. He scored 198, for God's sakes.
Anyway. I've got to say, hopefully Kefa, who has been a co-host on this podcast before, hopefully he's listened to the end of the podcast, because this is very important advice for him. I was texting him the day the teams came out and he told me he wasn't picking Neal, and I just begged him to pick Neal.
What?
And he managed to start his team without him, but he'll rectify that this week, hopefully. And my boy, Andy Brayshaw, 180 odd. Can't believe I didn't pick him.
Averaging 158, he's coming into 2.3% of teams, and hilariously enough, even if that happens, he'll still be under 10% of teams. So for anybody who likes PODs, Brayshaw certainly looks like he could be a top eight by the end of the year. We've covered a fair bit. We're obviously not going to cover everything in the main show, but we've already recorded for a fair while and we need to give some of our time to our patrons. But yeah, it was a fun conversation nonetheless. I know we didn't talk about the various configurations and stuff like that, but hopefully that gives people enough of a guide to make some of their decisions. And if that's not enough, make sure you join us, patreon.com/supercoachcoach, if you want to get some additional content, have a bit more direction around the strategy of trade boosts, and you want to support the show. We thank our patrons very much for their support. This show is brought to you by them. And with that, I might throw to you for your final sign off for the week, Mark.
Yeah, definitely a week where we're not telling you what to do. And that's never our strategy on this show, but it's definitely with three trades potentially and the variations of trades are just crazy. You've got to make the right decision for your team. I am really interested to have a bit more chat about whether we should be using the trade boost this week. But yeah, that's probably the longest show we've done for a while, Marcus. So see you later.
Catch your community next week. Good luck. Happy boosting for most of you.
Yeah.